Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. I know you got an electric scooter bike thing, and I know we're talking now and it's like late October or when this episode will come out in November, and I'm quite sure you're going to be 2 feet of snow and probably going to set, you know, set your bike aside for a few months and, or six months because of where you live. But when you look at it, one of the questions I fielded and thought about years ago, and I got a similar question. It was what we talked about last time. It was talking about, well, I'm setting up this test and I'm trying to interpret these rates, different rates that are occurring. Mm-hmm. But one of the questions we didn't touch on that's related to this is, well, how, you know, for a particular failure mechanism, what reliability is appropriate? You could get into modeling and all kinds of weird stuff there, or elevate it and say, well, how good does your product need to be? You know, and I think that's my question to you is, when you got that electric bike, in being a reliability guy that tends to go out and break everything you touch and take it apart when it does. Well, how long did you expect it to last for you before you had a failure? Not a routine maintenance like that, charging the batteries and stuff like that, but how long before you expected a failure?
I don't expect failures. I for,
well, you should be getting used to it by now.
2,200. Let's see. What do I have? 2,200 miles on it.
Okay.
I've ridden it 2,200 miles. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And the only failures I've gotten are, what would be a sign, you know, would be flats. And, you know, that's normal on any bike. Even though I've now made the bike tire more robust by putting in a Kapton liner into it, that's, you know, going to be even tougher to punch through with a thorn or a nail.
Yeah.
But it still can happen. It still can happen. It's just like our breakthroughs of COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I had only, you know, no mechanical issues. Now, I do have a battery, a lithium ion battery that has been recharged probably, at least 100 times. Well, maybe 30, 100 times.
Did you have a problem with your charger itself at one time?
I did. I did have a failure of the charger, and I took that apart and found that the very hot FET, probably, or an IGBT, was right next to a transformer and was causing the insulation on the transformer windings to bubble and melt because of the proximity of that component, and caused it to probably short. And that's what caused the AC adapter to fail. So that was unexpected.
But you had no, when you bought it, you're like, I get to ride this all summer and I'll be able to ride it for, say, 5 more years. Is that what your thought was? Maybe have to replace the battery, knowing what we know about things like that?
The battery would probably be the thing that I'd expect eventually to not hold very much charge. It'll, you know, certainly decline in its capacity. So, and I have no way of measuring that right now.
But the mechanical parts, other than flat tires, you were thinking, you know, this should be good for years, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so now let's switch this over. Yeah. So. But that's normal maintenance. You know, that's part of the expectation is that you're not going to have to replace this because it's now lemon kind of thing. And you didn't, you expected it to work out of the box right away and jump on the, and charge it up and get on the bike and go for a ride.
Yeah.
And then hope you don't crash it, because that would also be a failure mechanism. But yesterday, my wife was heading out to go do some errands, and she was back in like 30 seconds as the car won't start. And she has a Subaru Forester, and we've had it 5 years or so, maybe six, something like that. And the dash lights came on, but it wouldn't crank. And so I was like, well, that might be battery, might be something else. I don't know. Let's call AAA. The gut AAA comes out. He drives it. Goes, that's battery. He puts a charger on it for 5 minutes. Fires it right up. So I let it run for half an hour. Take it around the block. You know, and but your battery's getting old.
Yeah,
it's factory battery in there. It's 5 years old. And I said, are you getting a lot of battery calls now? He goes, yeah, because the cars aren't moving. And like my wife and I, we work from home vast majority of the time. We run errands maybe once a week. And sometimes the cars sit for 2 weeks or 3 weeks before getting moved at all. And he's saying, yeah, that's a different. So the older the batteries, they don't maintain a charge as long.
So
I'm getting called out to start cars all over the place. And by and large, as the batteries are, even when they're idle, they deteriorate their capacity. And it's like, okay, well, if you're running your car in a commute and you're driving like I used to do, you know, 50 miles each way twice a day, you know, 5 days a week, I didn't have a problem. My battery was always doing fine, but it's a different use condition now. And it's so we ended up with this relatively, I mean, it's not a new car, but it's not an old car by any means, and it wouldn't start. That was, and we didn't detect any dome lights on or any doors ajar or anything like that.
Right.
And so, but the concept is that there's, for any product, there's a wide range of use conditions, right? That excite different failure mechanisms and all that stuff.
Right.
But
right.
I think the whole discussion about how, you know, if I'm going to run a test, what am I trying to show or prove or experience like a life test? It hinges on, well, how reliable does your product have to be? And you've worked with startups and big companies and, you know, there's when the consumer buys a product, like you buy in this electric bike, it comes with an expectation about it will work out of the box. It'll work for some period of time.
Yes.
Right.
And generally, you know, and this is where, the question of how reliable does it have to be or how long does it have to last?
Right.
Now, you know, that's broken down in the design process as to, okay, what materials what are consumable? Well, first of all, it's mostly the things I'd worry about over life is the either things that have a limited life, like a lithium-ion batteries or any kind of battery, lead acid, as you mentioned, in a car.
Yeah.
All of them have a cycle, a number of limited cycles that they can perform and still maintain their function. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, aluminum electrolytic capacitors might be one of those, although they've been used and are certainly in some very old products and haven't had a cause failure necessarily. But you look at the elements of a design and you say, what is first of all consumable or has limited life? And that's going to be inherent. I mean, when Tesla built their cars, they had to make a trade-off of how much lithium-ion battery they're going to have and what the range of the car was going to be. And then the cost of replacing those over a period of time, because Tesla and everybody that uses lithium-ion batteries knows there's going to be a limited number of life cycles.
Yep.
Those are things you can control. Okay, those are the things you're going to have to make engineering trade-offs, just like material on a gear or a coating on a gold plating on a connector.
Yep.
You know, how many cycles is that connector going to be inserted in and removed, and so how thick should I really make this plating to be able to wear that many times?
Right, and
of course, the trade-off is gold is very expensive. And if they could put one molecule layer, they would.
Times I think, sometimes they don't even put that on. Yeah, they put tin on it and hope for the best.
Sometimes I think I've seen that. You know, it's like they're really skimping so that they just do the minimum. Okay.
Yeah. No, there was one thing, you know, speaking of the Tesla there and the battery, and it's not a trivial thing to replace the battery. It's not something you want to do in your garage. But brake pad, and when you mentioned earlier about the bike, because, well, my brake pads are going to wear out. And it should be something that you could fix, or it's easy enough to take a shop and they fix it for you. But when I first got it, I got a Toyota Prius years ago.
Yeah.
And I took it into the shop, and the shop guy was grumbling. It was kind of one of those, I didn't even think of it, is that part of the braking apparatus of the deacceleration of a Prius is that it generates power back into charging the battery.
Right.
Right.
Uses the electric motors to slow down. Right. And my bike does that too. It actually engages the motor to become a generator.
Right. So I that's cool. That's nice. But what didn't dawn on me was that the brake pads had they were like brand new. You know, we'd driven 5,000 miles or something, and the brake pads were like out of the package. And the guy said, this is bad for my business because I replace part of my shop is brake, you know, adjustments and repairs and everything else. And you guys all buy electric vehicles. I won't have half my shop volume.
Well,
which
I'm glad
is brakes.
He doesn't do oil changes too, because he's in trouble.
Yeah. Because there's, again, the Prius's electric motors.
Right. The whole technology is changing. And in fact, I think Consumer Reported rated Tesla very reliable just because it's so limited as far as the mechanics go. You know, the things that can go wrong in an engine don't exist with an electric motor and batteries.
It's just pretty, different things.
Straightforward. Different things. Yeah,
they hadn't figured out what those are yet.
The amount of electronics, interaction of the amount of electronics on a Tesla is quite different from a combustion engine car general. And so unfortunately that they got caught up in the reliability of their electronics as being a problem.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, as far as things that I would look at for life of or in what's called life entitlement of an electronic or electromechanical assembly, it would be broken down. You know, the last thing I'd worry about is the life of the semiconductors in solid state with no moving parts, any circuit board, anything like that. I'd only worry about variation in manufacturing, and I'd really worry about
software interactions on some of these complex
systems. Some software interactions, right? And timing, you know, the variation in, since like a Tesla has to be used in extreme and, you know.
Well, in Colorado in any given day, there's an extreme range of temperatures.
Right. And in Phoenix, you know, probably too in the summer.
Yeah. But,
so they have to work in all those conditions, and that changes the operate, you know, changes slightly, shifts everything to different conditions. Batteries have to operate at much higher temperature. They're charging and discharging. So that cycle time for those batteries is going to be different in Phoenix in the high temperature than it is going to be in Colorado at, 9,000 feet.
Very different. But one of the questions, though, when Tesla first brought out their car, their very first car, or their Model 3, I think, which was very popular, right? Mm-hmm. Were they competing on the expected life, the consumers saying, I'm going to spend $50,000 or $35,000 for that base model of that car, and it should last as long as a Chevy that's $30,000 or as long as a Toyota that's $30,000. I mean, they're into a market that we already had a population saying, here's how long I should be able to keep that car for 5 years without any major issues. Easy. Right. Just using that as a hypothetical is the way I think of it. As I buy a new car, it should be pretty error free, put gas in it, put oil in it, you know, wash the windshield, and it should be just fine. And, or where they just get into market and we'll figure it out later. And the question I ask when I work with a client when they're trying to create a new product or introduce a field is, well, how reliable does it need to be? Not so that you have low warranty costs, but so that the customer accepts the product. Because if you don't get that second sale and you don't get word of mouth, you're done. And it doesn't matter how reliable you think it should be, it's how reliable does it need to be.
How reliable does it need to be? But that's really talking about early life failures, because if it operates 2 or 3 years, you probably have, you know, already the market has accepted your product.
I agree. I think there's peace to that. But there's another element, and this was an article I wrote years ago, and just the other day I got another comment on it, and it was on how reliable does a delivery drone need to be? right? Or how reliable does a nuclear power plant need to be? Or how reliable does, you know, a fusion reactor need to be? Or how reliable does any new technology type stuff coming out? You know, the autonomous vehicles. How reliable does the truly, fully, no steering wheel, no safety driver, nobody else in the car, how reliable does that have to be before it's accepted? Now, there'll be, you know, people that'll jump in their car with no problem whatsoever, but there's, at some point, it's a factor. It's more than just it has to last 5 years, like my competition and my cost of ownership, like we're talking about battery replacement, stuff like that. Cost of ownership needs to be comparable to existing cost of ownership or better.
But, or better. I mean, you think of the, you know, lack of oil changes in electric cars and tune-ups and other things. Mm-hmm. You've really got a ongoing maintenance issue.
Yeah, save all those pennies for that battery if you keep your car for 10 years.
Well, right. But Tesla knows this and knows, and they actually, I think I talked at the Rams conference, and when you and I were at, you were doing interviews at a table.
Yeah.
I met a guy, I think the Tesla, one of the Tesla reliability managers, and he said, well, we have a guarantee that if after 10 years it doesn't hold 80% of the original charge, we'll replace the battery pack.
Wow.
And I go, wow, that, you know, 10 years, that's, you know,
that's,
I thought,
amazing.
That's amazing.
It's
right.
Either a technology breakthrough they know about, or it's part of the marketing to market acceptance.
Or they've already, or they built in that cost,
right?
You know, that they're going to have to replace it. Or people are going to hold it for 10 years. And, you know, that's another question. And we all, and I bring it up all the time, is technological obsolescence. A lot of times things work. It's, they're still functional, but they're so, their features and their functions are so limited compared to new products.
Wait a second. Aren't you the guy with the iPhone 6 still in your pocket?
No, I have I finally got a 11.
Okay.
I'm not going to buy the newest, but no. I do follow eventually, you know.
Yeah. So was that because of technologically obsolescence that you couldn't play Candy Crush on your old machine anymore or something?
Well, yeah. Eventually, Apple will quit putting out upgrades for your phone because it's too old, you know. And so, you know, I see that with I have a watch, and I Apple Watch, and you know, the functions and capabilities are getting better with each one of those. So
I know, but it's
but they all work, and I've got an iPhone 6 here that's doing, it would be perfect. I replaced the battery, so that's the only thing that is really a wear out that will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you obviously didn't give it to your daughter because it'd be broken screen by now. but I mean,
she's getting better because she pays for her own phones now.
Right, that's better. But the idea is that that iPhone 6, and I remember working at Hewlett Packard when we had consumer oriented products. We designed them typically for a 5 year, a horizon of 5 years.
Yeah,
you know, even though the warranty was a year or two years, depending on where in the world you are. We designed it so that it would go for 5 years. Now, the test and measurement type stuff, some of those were put into service and were expected to be used for 20 years. So the markets change, the expectations change, and everything else.
Right.
But I think there's another layer over it when it becomes a whirling egg beater in the sky with 400 pounds floating underneath it, that the perception is if that fails, it's severe. It's a catastrophic. It can come down and, you know, mow my lawn or hurt somebody.
It's a safety issue.
It's a safety.
It's a public safety issue.
So when things get into that safety realm or the perception of safety, I think then the ante goes up that you really need to create a robust, reliable, resilient system.
Yes. And also a fail-safe system that it's detects any anomalies of its operation.
And then it just hovers on down.
Just like... Yeah, we got a helicopter now on Mars, you know?
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's not going to, you know, crash into your enclosure. Maybe in 10 years when somebody builds a house up there, that then this helicopter is still floating around and crashes into their house.
Well, the interesting thing is it's completely autonomous. We can't control it from here because
it takes too long.
Right. So we have no, we tell it, and it's got its own intelligence along with the Curiosity or Perseverance rover that it's tied to. It's got a huge brain capability either built into the copter itself to say, oh, we're not, the conditions are not right.
Yeah, too windy, we're not, that's too rocky, don't land there. Yeah.
And it'd just be like when we get to autonomous vehicles. If there's any detection of anomalies in an autonomous vehicle going down the highway, there is a fail-safe mode where the car will pull itself over and notify through its communication network.
Oh, I can see a meme now.
It's disabled.
I can see a meme now. It's going to be one of these LA freeways with 400 lanes across it, and all the cars are pulled over to the side. Oh, Tesla did another update to their software. Yeah. They're all down for a reboot.
Yeah. Everybody's stuck at the side of the road.
That's right, waiting for the reboot.
And that's where testing is going to be critical. Well, especially when they have so many models, and does it work with all of them? It's interesting. But
yeah,
so I to say again, how long is something going to last? It's like, well, what factors do you have to control? Because as I see, a lot of unreliability comes from the variation in manufacturing and errors or changes that
we can't get this part anymore. This one's good enough. Throw it in there.
Exactly. And that's what to me the vast majority of failures are caused by, not by not by the fact that there was a known failure mechanism or known wear out, consumable material issues, whatever that was not considered. Those are things like batteries that you have to say, okay, I can only have this big a battery. Like how they decide for the iPhone. I think they probably say, what would it, we want it to run at least one day.
Full time use for so many hours. Yeah. I'm sure they have models and tracking for all kinds of ways to do that. But
you've got to usage profiles that are all over the place, people and temperatures and, what they have running.
Yeah. At the end of the day, though, no pun intended, is you need to look through, for your product, it's not how good can you make it, is how good does it need to be? How reliable does it need to be for your market's expectation? And if you miss that, it might be meeting your internal requirements just fine. But if your customers go, well, that's not working, or that's, the out-of-box failures. So if you ignore those, you're screwed, is my opinion.
I would reverse what you just said. And what you said was, it's not how good you can make it, but
you have to understand the customer's expectation.
Okay.
So if I buy an electric bike and I expect it to last for 40 years, I may be disappointed. I may well be disappointed at some point in time that this thing didn't last long enough. If I'm buying something for a manufacturing facility and we have a continuous run and it's got to go for 6 months and it's just not capable of going 6 months, I'm going to be very disappointed and upset about that. I mean, it depends on the market and circumstance, but I think the point is that you need to understand that expectation.
Right. But it's kind of, the philosophy in HALT is, extend the margins to the fundamental limits of technology. And that's standard technology and standard materials. Mm-hmm. And so when you find a weakness, then you want to extend it to the level of
I think there's a flaw. This may be another discussion though for another time, is because I think there's a flaw in that logic. If I pick the wrong material to start saying, this is the standard material, we're going to use this, right? I'm going to use a very brittle, easy to fracture glass on my phone, right? And I go to HALT and I change the how it's mounted, and I get the best I can get out of it. Now it's at its technological limit. But if I drop it 2 inches, it breaks. But if you don't know that that's unacceptable to your customers, I had one client one time, I was talking to him, and they're saying, well, if they break it and it's expensive, they know it's expensive, so they won't break it.
Well, that's what I think that's what Steve Jobs thought when he made this beautiful phone and it had no case around it. And now almost everybody is.
Yeah. But the idea is that it's a dance, and it continues to occur. But as you're bringing in something, especially safety related, you got it. It's not just, is it reliable?
No,
it's got to be perceived as reliable. Otherwise, it's not going anywhere.
No, that's a different level. When safety is involved, it escalates it to, and human life or property damage is involved, then it escalates it, 10 times more priority.
That's the idea. So if you're listening to this, and Kirk and I, we knew when we started this topic that we have different approaches to it. But we kind of get to the same point at the end of the,
think after 6 years, we finally...
We're not going to find anything we totally agree on ever. That's just not going to happen.
No, so I'm going to have MTBF. I agree with you on no MTBF.
Okay, there we go. Score one for the home team. Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're struggling with, I'm setting up a test, or I'm trying to design a product, or I'm building a model, or I'm trying to understand the customer part of it, is what are the factors that you consider when you're saying this is how good it needs to be before we're ready? What part of this is making sense to you or not? We'd love to hear from you. This is one that we get various questions about, that touch on this topic. So that's why I wanted to bring it up, because it's something that it's pivotal to us creating a good design, picking the right materials, understanding whether this failure mechanism is relevant or not. All of these factors depend on, how reliable does it need to be? And so, if this is an area that you're interested in, drop us a line. Let us know what you think. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can find a way to leave us a voice message or a written message. Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show can be found on LinkedIn or on the About pages on Ascendo, where you could get in touch with us a variety of different ways. And Kirk, I know that speaking for you is that we love getting comments and questions.
We do. Hopefully we'll get more, and that's the way we can most direct answer people's real concerns. And we know some of those will be repeated, and we understand that as people come into the field. So please continue to ask if you don't see the answer on our forums.
Yeah, and I should also mention, we all basically, once we get a question, we pretty much respond as quick as we can and try to, or right, help find an answer for you. Mm-hmm. But then we add it to the queue to go talk about, and then we that might show up, weeks or a couple weeks later. Don't feel like you got to wait for the podcast to come out to get your answer. We'll get back to you right away.
Right. It's good to talk to you, Fred.
All right, you too, Kirk. Have a good time and get another 2,000 miles on that bike before it snows. Oh, good luck with that.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.